Well, good afternoon. I'm just lounging around, drinking some coffee, and I'm just running through some chess positions, and that made me think about what I would like to do within Defeat NWO, as well as more, subjects to do with immediate conspiracies. We've done one on the boat people, for instance, a very specific now conspiracy that's extremely close to people's hearts. Indeed, more normies talk to me about it than tin foil hatters, it's a subject that really riles people, and I've done a Substack on that, and you can read what I think. I just want to say I do live very close to Dungeness. I can see across to France. I can see across to Dover and Folkestone, and I've been here since 2013. And I would just like to rather humbly suggest that anything I have to say on the subject could possibly be, if not pertinent, considered, added into the fact that I also know someone who has a full-time job with the border forces, I'll try and get a link to that one for you. And it's not that I'm saying I'm right and everyone else is wrong. It's just interesting that my views are so completely alternative to the general run of views. And my personal, concept of how to deal with life is don't go by what everyone's saying, go and have a look for yourself. And don't just go and have a look on one occasion. Go at different times of the year, different times of the day, different times of the week, Make your own observations in life and never, never deal in secondhand science, because science is science fiction. Science is moving forwards all the time. Everything is, subject to change at all different times. And I have to say, just to spoil it, as far as I'm concerned, this so-called thing, the boat people, is an apocryphal myth. It's just a popular story that's bandied around because people enjoy feeling uptight and angry about something nonsensical. And the Illuminati are well aware of that, and they pull the strings to make sure people get upset about things like that. So they're much more likely to fall into the witch hunts, like paedophile, and you say, oh, that person, they just point a finger and you go, that person has a paedophile. And then the man, the way to deal with paedophiles is to throw stones at them until they're dead, And the only problem with these types of witch hunts is we can't actually be sure that the accused is a wrongdoer. And I'm not entirely sure if we should be saying that the punishment for wrongdoing is to be stoned to death. And I just want to sort of backtrack from those popular notions and suggest that we step back a little bit and ask ourselves a few questions, such as what's really going on here, and then have a good, look for ourselves and decide what's possibly really going on here. Okay, so I would suggest to be very, very wary of terms like boat people or assassination or early death or paedophile or free lunch, right? All of those are very, very suspect terms, and if you ever hear any of them, immediately go, phew, and stand back and ask yourself what's really going on here. Because those five terms are used time and time again in today's world to pull your thought muscles into the direction the Illuminati want you to go. And this is what I want to say, about Defeat NWO. Yes, I deal with a few pertinent conspiracies. But also, I'm trying to produce a really high vibe, positive outlook, which is we can all easily go off grid, and this is how other people are doing it. I'm not here to say you've got to do this. I'm saying if you're interested in going off grid, I've found you 10 videos of people who are actually living off grid lives in different parts of the world, in very, very different ways, very different dwelling places, very different lifestyles. And, you know, if you've ever thought it was about going back to live in a wigwam, well, actually, these people have got saunas, they've got underfloor heating, you know, they've got Wi-Fi, they've got this, that and the other, and they eat goat cheese. You know, it's all good stuff, mod cons and everything. So that's, you know, a real positive impact type of Substack that I like to produce. Sometimes I just produce something incredibly silly to make you relax, if possible, and high vibe. But I also want to do a strand of Substacks, which are essentially... the whole point of them is to kickstart analytical thinking. I know some people call it critical thinking, but I don't know what that word critical is supposed to mean. Does it mean of high emergency? Does it mean to criticize? You know, I actually do not have a definition for the word critical. It doesn't mean anything to me. What I like to encourage everyone, and that's everyone I ever meet in life, I just set them one notch further onto the concept of constant analytical thinking. Now, of course, you can overanalyze anything, and I frequently do, but, you know, you might say, who am I to promote analytical thinking? And that's an excellent question. I have, on three different years, come second in the Welsh Ladies Chess Champions. And last year, I tied top women's score in the Welsh Ladies Chess Champions. That's playing chess at a national level. Now, chess is a game that, you know, it corresponds on 64 squares, which are the classic duality dark and light squares. And it's a game, but it mirrors the concept of warfare, because you're trying to eliminate the enemy and totally, you know, just stop them in their tracks by checkmate, you see. And checkmate is where you check the king and there is no escape square for the king. And that's called checkmate, and it's game over. And there are other things which can happen inadvertently, like stalemate, you know, where you didn't mean to, but he's not in check and he can't escape. There's no other move for the king and you can't put him in check because it's his move. And that's an unfortunate ending to any game. But there are moments in which it can be appropriate because, you know, if the only other result was that you ended up in checkmate, then it's a good idea to produce a stalemate. And a stalemate can be perpetual check, where you check and he moves and you check and he moves, and it's the same to and fro, you know, movement. But essentially, in order to produce this result of checkmate or stalemate, you have to think several permutations deep. And permutations are rather like children. So you have two children and they each have two children. So you've got four grandchildren, and then they each have two children. So before you know it, you've got eight great-grandchildren. So your two have become 14, if you see what I mean, and so on through each generation. And so in chess, each permutation line of thought is, you know, what can happen if I move there? And then what could happen if, having moved there, I move there, and they do this, and it becomes exceedingly complicated. I mean, you know, imagine finding birthday cards and presents for 14 kids. That's more than one a month, you know. So it's always best to understand the concept of cause and effect. Almost nobody seems to understand there is something called cause and effect, that effects don't happen because the stork brings a baby. The effect is not due to the stork, it is due to the cause, which is to do with men and women sort of fumbling each other and getting very physically involved, you know. And not many people know that, but babies actually are produced through sexual intercourse between one man and one woman, possibly more men, but essentially, you know, it's that bedroom stuff that produces babies. It's not the stalk. And of course, a lot of people in today's world are unaware of this cause and effect. And so they just idly speculate, wander around and think everything happens as a total random. There's some outer force up there throwing dice, and the dice fell in such a way that you landed with your ankle in a rabbit hole and over you went. But it wasn't your fault. You know, you couldn't have just like looked or not gone on uneven ground, that type of thing. It was, you know, it's the throw of the dice of fate. And for as long as people are prepared to be superstitious and imagine there's some outer force creating the effects in their life, they're not, you know, into cause and effect. So they're not able to understand permutations, levels of analytical thinking. So what I'm saying is, let's just say you've got a classic chessboard. And the first person who is always white, or the lighter, you know, pieces, they get the first move. And in that first move, nothing is really going to happen. They could do anything and it really doesn't make much odds. And the opponent can also do something and it doesn't make much odds. But within just four moves, you can produce checkmate. Now, that's pretty incredible when you consider that between the two armies, there's as much space again. There's four depths of squares, right? And the number, the sheer number with, you know, what is it, 32 pieces on the board. There's 64 squares and there's 32 pieces on the board. The sheer number, you know, must, I mean, we as a human race, we haven't worked out what the permutation possibility on a chessboard are. It's a number which stretches to what we could consider as infinite. Okay, so, you know, it's very, very rare, if it ever happens, that any two players in hundreds and hundreds of years play a game of chess and get exactly the same moves. I mean, it can happen, obviously, in the very quick checkmates from 4 to 10 moves, because there are the classic, you know, mistakes, essentially, which can happen over and over again. But say the game moves beyond 10 moves, you know, it's unlikely that every single move on the game will have been played between two opponents in the past. So once you've got past those initial moves, say up to about move 12, just because that number of moves allows each opponent to develop their pieces into the central section of the 32 squares, which are empty at the beginning of the game. You then have, you know, many, many options. And what frequently happens is that the pawns start to clash with one another. The pawns are considered to be the foot soldiers in, you know, the war analogy of chess. Or you could see them as each pawn is a platoon, you know. But essentially the pieces are the commanders, and they have much more scope for movement. And one of the trickiest pieces is the knight, the shape which is like a horse, because they can move in an L. So they can go one square to the side and two along, which is particularly bizarre because you've got to sit there and work out exactly where all the knight moves are before you do anything else. Because if there's one piece that's going to bugger up your plans, it's the opponent's knight. So, of course, one of the best ways to deal with this is just get rid of the knights as soon as possible. And in many, many games, that is the first thing that happens, is the knights go off the board because they take each other out. You know, they blow each other's pretensions up. And it's all very unhappy for the knights, but much happier for the opposing armies, because they don't have that nasty little difficulty of, shite, I didn't see that coming, you know. And if you could possibly eliminate the shite, I didn't see that coming in chess, so much the better. So, you know, in any average sort of middle game from about move 12 onwards, you're sitting there thinking, what should I do? And it's very often a pawn move. You know, should I take that pawn? Should I move forwards? Should I take a risk and move something forwards over here in the hope that I can build up some kind of offensive later on? And a lot of moves don't have any sense in them at all. They are just bluffing. You know, you're just bluffing to make the opponent think you've got a plan and there's something seriously bad happening there. So they start bringing all their forces across to that side where you bluffed, and then you're able to move up the other side, and oh dear, it's all very unhappy. But it is difficult to bluff on both sides at once. But I mean, some people are expert at that in life. So what I'm saying is, you know, it's not a question of sitting there and thinking, I'll take that pawn. You've got to think, what is going to happen if I take that pawn? And you've got to think of all the effects that could take place because of your cause. And it's not a matter of one cause and one effect. Right? If you have two kids, you're going to get a lot of effects. If you have one kid, you'll get half as many effects, you know, and so on. So whatever we do in life, you know, as we go on, you could say each year is like a move in the game of chess. Each year you're going to bring more and more trouble and complications into your life unless you're very, very aware of cause and effect. So as a young person, I thought, well, having kids, you know, and husbands and in-laws is obviously going to produce a lot of trouble in my life. So as I want a very simple life, so I can concentrate on things like chess and get to the status of a national title, just one example. I mean, I'm also the world's greatest Euphonium player, but you know, that's by the by. And incidentally, I'm Leif Waite's top wine reviewer. You know, these are sort of fairly world-class things. But I decided to be able to permutate life on that level by simply not having any kids, because I realised, you know, if you jump into bed with a man as a woman, sooner or later you're going to have a kid. And so I didn't jump into bed with a man, just to be absolutely certain on the cause and effect level, if you see what I mean. I don't expect anyone else to take life as easily as I do. You know, it does seem very simple. If you don't want kids, don't have sex. It's so basic, but most people simply can't come up with these very, very extraordinarily obvious things in life. And so the cause and effect completely bypasses them, and therefore there's no chance whatsoever for them to ever understand analytical thinking, because they can't think one step ahead, so they can't think many steps ahead. So what I'm trying to say there is, I don't want you to think I'm, you know, completely arrogant, suggesting that it's a good thing to develop analytical thinking. I think it's superb, and I think sometimes it's worth being broad-minded enough to consider what the enemy is thinking. So here's another illustration. If I'm playing white in chess, you know, when we get to that difficult middle game, why not get up, walk around the board and have a look at the black pieces as though you were playing black, and think, if I was playing black right now, what would I see as a threat and how would I deal with it? And that's one of the most powerful things you can do in chess, is go and have a look at the game from the opponent's point of view. So that is another massive point of analytical thinking. Don't just look at the white pieces from the white pieces. Go and look at the white pieces from the black pieces. Okay, go and consider your opponent's point of view. Get a new angle on the situation. But once you've made the move in chess, just like once you've done something in life, you can't take it back. And if you pick up a piece and you suddenly realise you didn't want to do that, tough, because you've got to move that piece somewhere. That's a rule. Once you've touched a piece, you have to move that piece. So that's why people sit on their hands when they're playing chess, so they don't go and make a wrong move, or at least they give themselves a chance to think through it. Like, you think of a brilliant move and then you say to yourself, and just what could go wrong there? Because something will go wrong. It's just that you're trying to counteract, you know, strongly on the things that do go wrong because you didn't think cause and effect. Chess is wonderful because you could see that there's not enough time when you're playing to think of all the causes and effects. And so you learn to have certain strategies, which is you learn to ignore quite a lot of potential moves and just focus in on four or five, you know, really possible moves inside of, you know, the bit that's really getting all knotted up. And just occasionally, you've got to bear in mind, your opponent is as weak-minded as you. They haven't got a clue what's going on either. So just shuffling a rook along the back rank can sometimes be perfect, because it achieved absolutely nothing, but it gave your opponent the chance to make the first mistake, right? And so don't forget that as well. Think several moves ahead. Think of all the different possible causes and effect. What is the board going to look like when you've stripped off all the pieces and there's a few pawns left? Go and have a look from your opponent's bird's eye view. And last of all, don't be afraid to just shuffle a rook along pointlessly. So it looks as if maybe you're thinking about doing something in the future, and they make the first mistake, because it's actually a lot easier to correct your opponent's mistakes than to correct your own. That's really worth knowing. Really worth knowing. And of course, most of the time you're playing on the fact that whatever you do, your opponent will assume was a master move and they're about to die horribly. And if you can bear that in mind all the time, you will not only make those interesting moves that achieve nothing except to propound your opponent's sense of fear, but you'll do so in, you know, a grating way where you pick up the knight and you not only take that pawn, but you grind the back hoof of your knight in on the ground. Like to say, ha, and I have set in motion a train of events which you can do nothing to counteract, and in about 14 moves you're going to die horribly. That's what you're going to get from playing me. Bad luck. And, you know, that the game is not just about cause and effect and moves. It's a great deal about psychology. And if you start the game and continue it with an exceedingly aggressive stance, you're in with more than a chance to win, just because the other person's feeling all nervous and unhappy all the time. You know, and it's very difficult to make good moves when you're feeling nervous and unhappy. Okay. I merely say this as someone who has sat many times in national chess championships. You know, and you have to deal with the situation. You're in a buzzing room of about 70 people playing games on these chess boards. There's 35 chess boards around, and there's 70 people playing, and there's a few adjudicators, and the room is simply humming with anger and, you know, hatred and all the sort of things you get on 35 battlegrounds all in the same room at once. It's quite horrendous, really, you know, to think this sort of thing can still go on in today's world. But it does give you that ability to just stand back and pause and consider. So what I want to suggest is that we look at a few subjects from at least the realms of duality, and we look at the same chessboard that the spectators are looking at, and instead of just saying I'm right because I'm white, we go and have a look at the situation from Black's stance, okay? And we think to ourselves, okay, so, you know, if I was Black, what does it look like? What am I dealing with white? What's going on here? You know, what's really going on here? And so when we're considering, you know, quite important life topics, instead of just thinking of them from our stance of total logic, let's go and have a look at the same topic, but from the opponent's stance of total logic. And then let's realise at all times that total logic is never applicable to human beings who are totally irrational, totally illogical. They can't even work out the concept of cause and effect, never mind several layers down permutations of analytical thinking, and they still imagine that babies are brought in a big handkerchief by the stork. Most people think that. Most people do not jump into bed with another person having any idea at all as to what the effect they're going to do when a baby arrives on the scene. But I've noticed one thing in life, and that is the people who don't jump into bed with anyone never get a baby arriving on the scene. Well, I'm thinking back to that story of Moses now, but, you know, there's a fairly good chance on the cause and effect, you know, thing that if you don't set the cause in motion, you won't get the effect, you know. So I'll try and remember to put a link in about the boat people. And I just want to say, and of course, if you want to unsubscribe me because I just said it, that's fine. I probably do talk some bollocks, but I don't talk through my hat. That is to say, I consider the subject through personal experience and observation before I start talking about it. Okay, so if I'm talking about the boat people, just remember that I live right on the seashore, overlooking France and Dover and Folkestone and Hythe and Dungeness and St Mary's Bay and, well, it's Littlestone, Greatstone, Lydon-on-Sea, Romney Sands, all of those, and Seabrook. Probably haven't heard of Seabrook or Sandgate, all of those. And the, yeah, so. I can see all of those. And what I'm not seeing is any little boats. So I've spoilt it now, haven't I? That's all I'm saying. You can talk about boats coming over as much as you like. And indeed, other people down here talk about it. There are people coming over on the boats. And I'm like, well, I've never seen any boats, ever. I've never once in, what, 12, 13 years of being here, I've never once seen a boat. And I've never heard that person in the Border Falls talking about boats either, but hey, the boat people, But anyway, there we go. I mean, it is incredible, isn't it, that nobody realises that everyone who comes into this country comes in on an aeroplane. That's the tourists and the people just visiting their family and just don't go back again. Hello? Right, I've spoiled that one. Okay, I won't link to it because you can see what I think, right? There's no boats. They just come in on aeroplanes. It's hilarious. The boat people. Dear, dear me. And any assassinations weren't assassinations. They're just stagecraft, Bang. Oh, look at that. Martin Luther King died. What a good chap he was. That's dreadful. He was black. Racist bastards. You don't still believe in the assassination of Martin Luther King and Kennedy. And now, what's this latest one? I don't know anything about it. I just saw something on YouTube. Charles Kirk or something. The three Ks. KKK, Ku Klux Klan or something. I mean, it's pathetically funny, isn't it? Hilarious. Limp. That's what I'd call it. Lame. It's so lame. I can't be bothered thinking about it. And all those rock stars that die young. Hilarious. Oh, dear me. The general public are so easy to hoax, aren't they? The boat people. Oh, that's dreadful. Oh, dear me. So we have this collective anger called the boat people. Oh, it's terrible. Yeah, it's dreadful. Meanwhile, hundreds of aeroplanes land in this country every single hour, 24/7. Full of people. Do the people go back? No, that's right. But boat people, yeah. Anyway, so what I'm saying is, I want to encourage you not only to think cause and effect, think several layers, several permutations ahead, like the concept of having two kids who have two kids who have two kids, and before you know it, you've got 14 kids, grandkids, and so on, great grandkids. And it can only get worse from there, unless they all die mysteriously, which they can do. But bloody number of birthday cards, whew, goes through the roof. I just couldn't be doing it. I can't afford to, pay for food in the fridge most of the time. Never mind buying birthday cards for people. So what I want to say is, on a really super notch here, is let's imagine that each subject we're dealing with, we're placing it out like the middle game in a game of chess, and we're looking at the subject as if we were playing the white pieces, but we then go around and look at the subject as if we were playing the black pieces, so we get our opponent's point of view, because the spectators, that's everyone else apart from the two opponents playing the game of chess, are able to look at the board from the situation of neutrality and see it, without being emotionally involved or invested in the outcome, right? So, in order to totally understand anything in life, what I'm saying is try to detach yourself from being invested in the outcome. Look at it as if you were an alien just coming across and going, oh, look at that. I wonder why they do that. What are they clambering over each other in bed? What's that all about? Well, I don't know. They come back 9 months later, 10 months later, saying, those people what are clambering over each other in bed have now got a little thing in a cot next to the bed. That's interesting. Cause and effect.